Hi there, my name's Oisin Lunny and welcome to Audio Talks, presented to you by Harman. And in this episode, we dive into the fascinating world of Foley artistry. I am delighted to be chatting with a very special guest. He is a Foley artist, a percussionist, and the creator and host of the hit online content series, Rhythms of Comedy. And he is followed by 4.6 million people on Instagram, 5.3 million people on TikTok, and 7.8 million people on YouTube and rising. Welcome to the podcast, Josh Harman.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Well, we were talking just before we hit the record button right now, and I was explaining to you how huge fans we are at Audio Talks of what you do. It's a reliable destination to go to online and just put a smile on your face. It's the joy of music, the joy of communication, and we are just thrilled to have you join us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm so glad that you enjoy what I do. And yeah, that's really what it's all about. It's just a little slice of joy for you and your family to just enjoy, and it's about the joy of music and sound and being curious, and that's really just what I love, and I love sharing that with everyone, and I'm excited to chat about it.
Fantastic. A little slice of joy. I love that. So listen, just in case some of our regular listeners have arrived at the podcast and they haven't really experienced that little slice of joy yet, should I say, links in the show notes, how would you describe what you do today to someone that you'd never met before? Describe your job, because it's really awesome.
I would say that, I mean, it is hard to describe. What I usually say is you should just take a look and you'll understand it right away. But essentially, I am a Foley artist, meaning that I make sound effects for movies, TV shows, video games, and film. But the way that I do it is rather unique, and not the way that a traditional Foley artist would work. The way that I do it is I take all the sounds that are needed for a particular scene. Oftentimes I'm working with classic cartoons and funny clips, say like Tom and Jerry or the classic Peanuts like Snoopy, and I'll do it all in one take. So I do it live. It's a live scoring type of thing. And this has become quite the phenomenon on social media. And that's what I do.
Amazing. Amazing. And folks, like he says, if you haven't experienced it, just hit the link in the show notes and dive in. It will put a smile on your face. And Josh, for the uninitiated, how would you describe a Foley track on a movie or an animation?
Yeah, this is something that I never really knew or appreciated as a child, you know, watching these cartoons or movies or video games too. But a lot of the times what you see, rather what you hear, let's say when you're watching a film, is not actually the audio that was recorded at that time of filming. A lot of the times, most of the sound effects that are in a movie or a TV show are recorded after the fact by someone called a Foley artist. Foley, invented by a man named Jack Foley, it's named after him, is the art of basically re-layering or redoing the sound effects after the fact, using oftentimes very surprising, unexpected objects that you could never otherwise predict, all kinds of weird things that I've now become very acquainted with. But yeah, that's what it is. It's the art of making sound effects for shows.
Phenomenal. And you mentioned that, you know, when you were growing up watching these classic cartoons, Tom and Jerry, etc., you weren't really aware that the Foley was doing what it does. When did you first become aware that this was a thing? And then when did you want to start doing it yourself?
So I never studied Foley or even film like in college. I didn't even study music in college. I just have played music my whole life. I grew up playing the drums. I started playing the drums when I was 3 years old, and it's always been a part of me. And during COVID, I had started uploading these videos of myself playing the drums, just sort of a standard drum social media type of thing. I was doing covers, you know, I was even doing like exercises on the drums, just very standard drum content. But over time, I just wanted to make the videos more and more creative, and I wanted to start pushing myself. And so every time I would upload, I would try to just make that video a little bit more exciting, a little bit more unique than the previous one. The first sort of thing that gained a lot of traction was that I started to take clips of comedians, because I also love comedy and I used to do stand-up, and I would play along to the rhythms of the comedian's jokes. So I would, you know, take a minute long joke from Jerry Seinfeld or Bill Burr or any of the great comics, and I would like sort of dissect the mechanics of the joke and play it out on the drums. And I called it Rhythms of Comedy. And this gained some traction, was very exciting. And then one night, I'm not even sure how this occurred to me or why, but I just thought, oh my God, all the videos are in English, because I was taking English speaking comedians and working with that material. And I realized if I could remove the language from this somehow, but still keep this concept of playing drums along to comedy, then the videos, I bet they'll do much better because anyone could enjoy them. You don't have to be from an English speaking place. And I was like, well, what kind of comedy doesn't have language in it? I guess slapstick. Well, how would that work? Well, I've always loved impressions. Impressions have always had this magical quality to me. When someone can make their voice sound like something else or someone else, that's really, really exciting and captivating and engaging to me. It's one of my favorite like genres of comedy. I just love impressions. And so then I was thinking, oh, well, what if I could do impressions on the drum set? What if I could make my drumstick sound like something else? What if I could make, you know, my brush sound like a whisk in the kitchen, or I can make my snare drum sound like a washing machine? And then it's just clicked, like, oh my God, I can create sound effects. That's what I'm going to do. And so I never actually set out to become a Foley artist. This idea was something that I really backed into in this counterintuitive way in service of making better videos online, not because I was so passionate about sound effects or I loved the film industry or behind the scenes or anything like that. Even though I do, I find all that very interesting. But it was really just an idea I had to make better videos. And also just to challenge myself on the instrument. I had never seen another drummer do that before, make sound effects like using the drums. In music, I was always fascinated when the drummer would make reference to something in the lyrics. Like if in the song, you know, if the singer said something about, I'm knocking on your door, and then the drummer would play like some cross stick sounds, you know, to create a little door knock. I always thought that was great, like that kind of thing. Or various drummers who bring unexpected sounds out of the drum set, you know. I always thought that that was such a cool thing when I would see a drummer do something I had never seen before. Like there's this guy, I remember in high school, this guy named Juan Carlito Mendoza won the Guitar Center drum off. And one of the moves that he did, he turned his snare drum upside down and played the wires of the snare. And I thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And I was like, oh my God, like he like discovered a new sound. And to me, that was just the most captivating thing. So always have had a sort of a penchant for sounds, exploring timbre and tone when I play the instrument. But yeah, the Foley thing was just an extension of me wanting to be as creative as I possibly could. And I've just continued to evolve and learn about it and get better at it and keep pushing myself to this day. And I've been doing it now for a few years. It's my full-time job. I don't know how all this happened. I don't know. But that's the story.
Amazing. I love it. I love it. So like how, if you were describing the role of Foley in terms of the enjoyment of a movie or an animation, how important would you say that the Foley sounds are to that end experience?
It's so important. It's essential. If you were to take it out, take the sound effects out that were recorded after the fact, it would be shocking how much it actually adds to the realism of the film. Your ability as a viewer to just get lost in the movie and forget that you're watching a movie at all, a lot of that is dependent on the audio, even more so than the visual, I would say. It's so, so important. It's critical. And by the same token, if the sound effects are not perfect, if they're a little bit off, that can take you right out. If something doesn't line up, if the sync isn't perfect, if footsteps are happening and the sound effects of those footsteps don't line up exactly right, it just ruins the entire thing. So it's really, really an important role, especially in service of the story. At the end of the day, that's the ultimate mission of any of this, is to tell good stories. And the Foley art, because it's invisible, it's recorded after the fact, it's really, it's an unsung hero of filmmaking. It really is. It's so, so important.
The unsung hero of filmmaking. I absolutely love that. You're completely right. That's a great way to describe it. So are there any OG Foley artists? Speaking of unsung heroes, I mean, I don't know if it's even possible to access details of this, but are there any OG Foley artists or particular movies or animations that you would say have really influenced what you do today?
I am not a professionally trained Foley artist. All the skills that I'm showing online are things that I've taught myself and learned in my own way. So I don't really take influence from any like particular Foley artist, although there are some really amazing people who I've gotten to talk to who have showed me stuff. But I really am taking most of my inspiration from like the drummers that I like, because I view myself as a drummer and musician first. And there are so many great old school drummers that have really influenced me, especially when it comes to like showing off personality and sort of flair and showmanship on the drums, which is always something I was drawn to. People like Papa Joe Jones, who is one of the greatest, most swinging, incredible jazz drummers of all time, played with the Count Basie band, always with a big smile on his face, always with a little like, you know, lifting his eyebrow a little bit, like kind of playing with the audience, just being a real character. And also getting interesting sounds out of the drums, using the cross stick, using his fingers on the head of the snare drum, and always with such attitude and flair and effortlessness. Always everything he played was effortless. I found that to be so alluring. There's a video on YouTube that's called like Joe Jones, a magician on drums. And I love that title. And that was something that I wanted to become. I wanted to be a magician on the drums. And this was my way of sort of accomplishing that. And so many other amazing, I mean, Buddy Rich, very funny. He was obviously perhaps the most technically perfect drummer who ever lived. And a lot of his solos have incredible dynamic showmanship and humor. Like if you go and watch a lot of his performances on Johnny Carson, he's really funny. And that to me is great. And so a lot of inspiration comes from that. And also, I mentioned Magic. I'm obsessed with Magic, Close-Up Magic. Cannot get enough of it. Consume hours and hours and hours of Close-Up Magic on YouTube, online, in person when I can. I just love it. The way that magicians use their body, use their hands. It's that effortlessness, that just feeling of like, how is this possible? That childlike wonder that it evokes. I love that. I just love that. And so I bring a lot of that into my work as well.
That's perfect. So on the theme of magic, let's talk about how you make the magic happen. How do you actually go about creating sounds for a scene? Can you walk us through a bit of your creative process?
Yeah, the process. So the end result that you see online is very polished and it's perfect. But behind every video is so much trial and error and experimentation and things not working. So once I have the clip that I want to work with, I mean, now I've done so many of these and I have a lot of experience where I can sort of intuitively be like, okay, I'm going to need tinfoil. I'm going to need a rubber bouncy ball. I'm going to need a washcloth and like a coat hanger. You know, I can just like, okay, I got it. I can do them a lot quicker now. But oftentimes, at least definitely when I was starting, I would just watch the clip 100 times and be like, okay, I think that kind of sounds like this. Let me try that. No, that doesn't work. It needs to be a little bit brighter or it's too tinny. Let me just try putting a towel down over the drum or muting this in some way. Or, oh, this is a bit too dry. Maybe something that's going to ring a little more. And just testing over and over again until I've got it right, until I've got the right sound. Once I've got all the objects that I want to use sort of picked out that match up with the sounds, then it's a matter of choreographing all of those movements so I can do the entire scene live in one take. And I approach it very much like each cartoon or selection from a cartoon. I approach it as if it were a classical percussion piece. I grew up, you know, playing orchestral percussion in high school and middle school. And so I approach the cartoon sort of like that, as if it was scored out for, you know, weird percussion. You know, it's a very wide umbrella and can include all kinds of wacky things. And that's just a matter of rehearsing over and over again and figuring out, okay, if I'm going to play the slide whistle with my right hand, then while I'm lifting, you know, the bar of the slide whistle, then my left hand at the same time needs to be grabbing for the shaker, which is coming next. And I have to coordinate that movement. There's a lot of independence. That's a drummer term, independence, which is your limbs moving independently of one another. So your right hand is doing something while your left hand is doing something completely different. That training I have because I grew up playing the drums. So I am able to do a lot of that naturally, but it still takes a lot of practice of developing the independence of my hands doing two different things at once, or even my hands doing different things and I'm making sounds with my mouth as well, and figuring out how I'm going to coordinate all those movements, rehearse it a bunch of times, scream and yell when I keep messing up right at the last minute. And then finally, I have a beautiful take. And oftentimes my signature is that I smile really big at the camera at the end of the video. This is partly because I just love to smile and it's fun to do what I do, but also it's the feeling of knowing I just nailed that. And I know it's great. And it just feels so good when all that hard work comes together and I know that I've created a little jewel. It brings me satisfaction to no end.
Fantastic. And that's really what's communicated to the millions and millions of fans online. You watch it, you share that elation, and the feeling is collective, as well as you having kind of absolutely nailed it right there. You know, it's phenomenal. It's such a lovely format, and there's a fair bit of magic under the hood as well. Now, it sounds like a lot of your processes are quite analog. You know, there's a bit of tinfoil, there's the kind of the whistle and the shaker and this, that and the other, and it's this very complicated independent choreography of putting it all together. Does sound technology come into this in terms of what you do, or do you think it might do?
I use a very simple setup. At least I imagine, you know, we're on an audio podcast, people are using all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, plugins and who knows what. I really try to keep it as analog as I can, because I think there is a sort of special quality, especially because what I'm doing is, first and foremost, I'm making video content. That's sort of the primary. And the secondary is I'm doing Foley. But the primary is I want it to be a great video. And I think that the video is just more exciting when what you see is what you get. And that I'm just taking an object and I'm manipulating the object in real time and space in a certain way to create a sound, as opposed to I'm holding an object up to a microphone and I'm manipulating it digitally after the fact to get the desired result, which is the better way to do Foley. But to create a Foley video like I do, it's superior. So very, very simple. Like no fancy preamp, no anything like that. It goes straight into Logic. Actually, for a lot of the videos, I used to use GarageBand. And I talked about that in other interviews too. It's like, yeah, I just use GarageBand because I don't even do anything. But now I've graduated. I use Logic now. Yeah, very, very simple. And sometimes I will do a bit of light editing on the sounds. If something's not like totally perfect, I will adjust it in post. I don't like to do that, but I will do that sometimes. But I try to keep it as minimal as possible.
It's very much about capturing that authentic moment and then sharing it with the world. And I'm curious, how much time do you typically invest in making your videos? You mentioned there's a lot of research, a lot of practicing, and then you nail it, you get the take. But like, how long does it typically take to get to that end, that destination?
It's absurd. I got to work on this. I got to work on not doing like 5 million tries. And I have to work on just being like, this take is good. It's, you don't need to do 30 more to like fix that one tiny thing. It's fine. But oftentimes the videos take me probably 3 to 4 days each, just for a 30-second little video. So there's so much effort that goes in behind the scenes to make them great. And that's just how I like to create. I know a lot of creators have a lot of success posting videos every day, multiple times a day. That just doesn't work for me. I don't like to create that way. My preference has always been to spend time on each little project and make it really special. And so I spend a lot of time on each video, even though they're short, even though on social media, everything is just a flash in the pan and it doesn't last very long. I find that the effort is usually worth it because the videos will be better. And the better video is just more fun for me to put out and to show off when I know that I've done my best work.
Yeah, again, it's the authenticity that really connects with people, I think. And, you know, your path into doing what you do today is super interesting, because I realized that a few years ago you were an usher for The Tonight Show and you were working at NBC's Today, but then you went solo and became a full-time social media creator. So this is a badass move, but it's also a big leap. What inspired you to kind of step off the edge of that particular cliff?
I went rogue. I went totally rogue. Oh God, I did it. So yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have a similar story in that the pandemic just completely upended everything. Before COVID, I was working at NBC. I was in the Page program. So if any of the listeners have seen the show 30 Rock, I was literally like Kenneth from that show, Jack McBrayer's character, where I had the blue blazer and I was, you know, ushering people into their seats for the late night shows, giving studio tours, like literally anything that needed to be done, I was helping to do it. It was so much fun. I loved doing it. I loved being in that environment. It was really exciting. I got to meet all kinds of interesting people. And then I was supposed to, I mean, everyone who was a page, you do that in a cohort of other pages. So you're with a bunch of people and you're all supposed to get a job, like a permanent job after your year is done. But my whole cohort's year was cut short by the pandemic. We all got sent home. We all lost our jobs, basically. And so I had to give up my apartment in New York City, moved back home to New Jersey with my parents. Miraculously, like a couple weeks into the pandemic, got hired at the Today Show for a remote position as a writer, which was really lucky to get a job at that moment when everyone was losing their jobs and unemployed. So much television and film and all that shut down. But I was living at home and the Today Show was like an early morning show. And so I would be done with work very, very early. And there was COVID, so there was just nothing to do. And I'm back home. I've got my childhood drum set that I used to play when I was a kid and nothing but time. And I was just like, man, I don't know. It's 2 o'clock. Like, what am I going to do? Go to sleep? So I should start an Instagram. I had never had an Instagram, by the way, before this. I had never had personal social media. And I was like, well, this would be fun. I should just film myself playing the drums. I love to play the drums. And that I could post it online and be helping me pass the time and keep in touch with my friends, keep in touch with my 10 friends, while I ride out the pandemic at that time, which we all thought like, oh, this will be over in like a month or two. And so I really had never planned to do this full time, to be a creator full time, or to be even a musician full time, because I really was like, TV is the thing, comedy is the thing, writing is my thing. And the videos just were so much fun to make that I would be in a meeting at work and thinking about, oh, what video am I going to make this afternoon? And then when the video started to get views and really the numbers started going up, suddenly then brands start reaching out, wanting to do partnerships and sponsorships, and they're offering to pay you. This was very exciting, but still never occurred to me that it could be a full-time job until I got an offer for a brand deal. And they wanted me to make, it was 3 videos. So each video takes me about 3 days. And so this was going to be maybe like just under 2 weeks worth of work. And I was going to get paid more than I was making in an entire year's at NBC. Like, it was more than my entire year's salary for a package of 3 videos. So that was the moment where I was like, whoa, what is even going on? But it's still from that moment was another like 8 months before I actually got the courage to quit. It's very daunting to go out on your own and just to do something uncharted like that. I also was a very good student growing up. I was a straight A student, always wanted to be doing the right thing and pleasing the right people and impressing my superiors. And quitting anything did not come naturally. It felt so wrong. And I remember calling my boss at the Today Show and my voice was trembling. I was so nervous. I was like, I'm sorry. I'm calling you because and I was like stammering. I couldn't even get the sentence out. And my boss interrupted me and she said, oh, you want to quit to make videos? You should do that. The videos are great. I've seen them. I love them. Go ahead. Like, you can't work here anymore. Just go make videos. And that really lifted a weight off of my shoulders too, and was a very kind thing of her to say. And I haven't looked back.
I love that story. And there's a lovely bookend to that. I believe you were invited back by Jimmy Fallon to perform on the show. What did that feel like?
That was really, really crazy, because a year prior to that, I was putting people in their seats. Like, I literally, the audience would come in and I'd be like, okay, you're in, E4. And I would, escort them and usher them into their seat. And I'm just hanging in the back of the studio. Not that long after I started putting myself out there online, I'm now on stage as a guest of the show. Of course, it was during COVID, so it was still, we filmed it over Zoom, kind of a bummer, but still, that was a real moment for me. And it just helped me appreciate the value of putting yourself out there, no matter what the craft is, audio, Foley, whatever, anything, music, doesn't matter. There's so, so much value in presenting what you do to the public. I think there's inherent value in doing that, notwithstanding how it's received or how many people receive it. There's so, so much you learn from just presenting what you do. And the Tonight Show appearance was a big moment for me in that it just clicked for me, like, oh, this would not have happened if I had just kept my drumming to myself, essentially, no matter how good it was. Or if I was the world's best employee of NBC, this would not have happened.
What a journey. It comes back to that word again and again, authenticity. It's your authentic self in these videos, and they connecting with people all over the world. And I love that kind of origin story there. And I love the speed of it as well. And the fact that you got that bookend, that kind of beautiful symmetry with actually being invited back to perform on the show. But social media, you know, that this is obviously like a massive kind of legacy broadcaster, NBC, they're huge. But it's been social media that has really elevated what you do and brought it to a global audience. How have you embraced the different social media platforms in terms of reaching and growing a global audience?
I would say I have an interesting relationship with social media in that obviously I'm very good at it and I've received a ton of benefit from it. But I also have not forgotten the fact that it can be quite nefarious, both as a consumer and a creator. There are many pitfalls that one can fall into. It's very easy to fall into the trap of comparing yourself to others on social media. That's sort of how it works. It's kind of, you know, baked into the nature of the platforms. It's very easy to become obsessed over the numbers and to start equating your self-worth with video performance or post performance, and which is something that I've really struggled with for a long time and still struggle with. Putting so much work into a piece, putting it out there, and then sort of after the fact, judging it based on how well it does, how many people see it, which is so unhealthy. And I try to not do that as much as I can, but it's still difficult to avoid that. And so I embrace social media, you know, on one hand with open arms, but on the other hand, like a little bit like what I just have to always remind myself that mental health matters. You're nothing without a healthy brain. And so I take a lot of steps to ensure that I can hold on to that, which is very important to me. I don't post that often. I only post when I want to, which I understand is a luxury based on how well the accounts have, you know, done and grown over the past few years. But I don't give myself like, oh, I have to post every 3 days, or I only post when I have something that I want to share. And I find that that has worked for me also because I know that the videos are good. And so I can post less frequently knowing that I'm putting out the motto that I use is all killer, no filler. In terms of the various platforms that I use, my focus is TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. The past year, YouTube has become such a big focus of mine. I love YouTube. I mean, all the platforms serve their own function and they're very similar, but they're also quite different in terms of how people use them. And I think about that in terms of the way that I share content on these platforms. Like Instagram is the best platform for actually being social. The way that people interact with Instagram is very different from the way they interact on TikTok. Like on Instagram, a huge facet of Instagram is the DM. If you see someone on TikTok that you want to connect with, a lot of times you won't send them a TikTok DM. You'll find them on Instagram and send them a DM there, which is kind of strange, but that's just sort of is how it goes. And people on Instagram are genuinely still connected to their friends. And it's a lot of sharing content to your friends. Like you come across a piece of content, like maybe it's a recipe video and you want to send that to your mom or you want to send that to your friend or, you know, something like that. Like it's all about sharing. It's more bite-sized pieces of content. Whereas YouTube is sort of just like its own like whole world. I mean, YouTube is so amazing because the wealth of content on YouTube is it's infinite. It's amazing. Like anything that you could possibly ever want to learn or know, the answer is almost definitely on YouTube. And so people go to YouTube, you know, let's say you are like your toilet's clogged. You're not going to go on TikTok and be like, how do I unclog my toilet? You will put that oftentimes and watch a YouTube video about it. And so it's a search engine, whereas the others are not. And so you have to think about the title and the thumbnail of the video. I mean, this is not groundbreaking stuff in terms of like the world of content creation, but it is really important that each of the platform has their own like idiosyncrasies, and approaching them distinctly will behoove any content creator looking to grow.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And given what you've said about the importance of, you know, maintaining your mental health, which I think is, you know, literally words to live by, that's so great. And also the fact that you're approaching each of the different platforms in a different way, you're thinking about the platforms. Would you have any tips for musicians or artists in terms of creating great social media content? Is there anything they should have in mind?
Yes, I have many, many tips, but I will try to maybe speak at a high level. I guess it depends on who these tips are for. If someone who's just starting out is very different from someone who's like got a small following and wants to supercharge it. But the most important thing, as I said before, is just to put yourself out there and to not fall prey to like, oh, I guess this is what's viral. I should do that. That is really, really dangerous way to think. This is what's trending. Let me just jump on this trend, which can work maybe a couple times, but after a while, it holds no water. The important thing to think about is yourself and your own story and your own ability, your own approach, and trying to put that forward. The best way to succeed on social media is just to be unique. And it sounds difficult. Everyone has something that is totally unique about them. It's about just sort of figuring out what that is and putting that into your content. And maybe it's an ancillary interest that you have. Like maybe you love bird watching or maybe you love lawn games. I don't know. When things become interdisciplinary, I think that's when magic can really happen. For instance, my content, I'm combining two things that I really love. I love drumming. I love percussion, but I also love movies and I love comedy and I love cartoons. I guess this is multiple things that I'm combining, but by bringing those together, that's when something new comes out. So that is an approach that I think is really, really powerful. The interdisciplinary approach in terms of like, how am I going to create something new? Everything's been done. Combining disparate things yields unexpected and very entertaining results. I think that if you're like a musician, specifically like tips for musicians, play really fast. That's a joke. That's a joke. Because oftentimes what you see on Instagram is just like 7-year-old kids like just shredding out of their minds. But I would say that at least my approach is that I wanted my videos to be enjoyable and understood and appreciated and like just fun for people who are not musicians. That to me was really important. I wanted it to be exciting. Like you don't have to know what Foley is. You don't have to know about anything, but it's very approachable in that regard. So I think that you'll just reach a much broader level of success if you can somehow make videos that are approachable to a wider audience. Like find a way, even if your thing is jazz piano, how do you make that accessible and approachable and enjoyable and fun to someone who has never thought about jazz piano before? That's a really fun challenge to think about. It's worth doing. Of course, there's also value in just being hyper, hyper specific. And like maybe your whole channel is about tritone substitutions and that's it. There's value in that too. There's nothing wrong. Like there's no bad approach. It's just about doing what is unique and special to you. That's really the nugget of it. And also don't worry about like stupid things like hashtags or like what time should I post or how long should the video be. Like, yeah, it doesn't matter. That's all just like whatever. If it's a good video that's fun to watch, it will go viral. End of story, period.
Very solid advice. That is just music to my ears. Pardon the pun. You've had some really unique guests on your channels and, you know, you're kind of doing Foleys together. Talk to us a bit about, you know, if there was anywhere you'd like to recommend or any specific guests that you think are a great combination with your good self. Where should people dive in?
I mean, I've been lucky now to have done a lot of really great, fun collaborations. I've done a couple of videos with Benny Blanco, one of the most amazing producers, and just such a nice guy, such a fun person, and just a great hang. We had so much fun making those videos together. They came out really great. That's another tip as well. Like if you are genuinely having fun and the camera's rolling, you've done it. Like that video is very, very likely to do well if you are having a good time and capturing that energy. And so especially with a collaboration, when multiple people are now having fun together, that effect is multiplied. And so that's really the goal with any of the collaborations that I do. It's first and foremost, yeah, I want to make a good video. But the principal thing I'm trying to do is have a really good time and make sure that that person I'm working with is having an absolute blast. I mean, these are skills that I learned actually as a page at NBC, bringing it back to my first job, where I was oftentimes like getting a very famous person like a coffee or a water. And from that experience, I learned how to talk to anybody, no matter who they were, and to instantly make them feel very, very comfortable, and to not be starstruck or to not just right away to develop a rapport with someone. And that is a skill that I take with me into any of the collaborations that I do, which is just really fun. Like It's just about connecting on a human level and doing this fun, silly thing together. I recently did one with Joe Jonas of the Jonas Brothers. So fun. He was great. He absolutely nailed it. Such a fun, just like hang and a good time. We didn't have that much time to put it together. So I was really actually impressed with, I was like, all right, Joe, here's what you're going to do. Here's the choreography. You do this when this happens and this. And he's like, great, got it. And then we nailed it very quickly. It was great and kind of a rush. So that was a fun one. I loved working with the Blue Man Group. That was such a treat. Just the energy of that environment, that universe that they've created. Such a joyous energy, which of course resonated with me, but just a great spirit of creativity. And any idea that I had, they were like, yes, let's do it. And I was like, okay, we're going to need a fire extinguisher, and that we're on it. Like, how big? You know, that was a really fun video. I would recommend watching that one if you want to check out collaboration that I've done.
I'm kind of looking forward to diving back into a lot of those editions. But let's look into the future. Talk to us about what's next for Josh Plays Drums.
I mean, wow, what is next? This is a question I'm asking myself daily. What the hell am I doing? What is going on? I think what's next is just bigger and better projects. The spirit that I started with of just each video, I want it to be better than the previous one, remains. And that is still my goal. It's come to my attention over the past couple of years of doing this that kids really love my content, which I think is amazing. Young people, even toddlers, I'm getting notes from parents saying my 4-year-old, my 5-year-old, my like infant baby loves watching your videos. Like, I can only get him to like relax or eat his vegetables or like behave if I show him some of your videos because it just makes him smile so much. Or my 6-year-old kid is interested in drums and wants to learn music because of your videos. That's the best. I mean, that is just like, oh my God, that's the greatest message you could possibly send me. So I'm actually leaning into that. I'm working on some projects that are like especially kid-friendly, designed for kids, more on the educational side that I can't quite fully talk about, but when they do come out, we can do another interview and I will tell you all about it. But yeah, music education is really important to me. I had so many amazing teachers growing up who taught me a lot, and I would not be where I am now. I wouldn't have half these skills that I have now without the amazing teachers who just opened my mind. The fact that now I'm in a position where I can be someone who helps other people learn about music, helps other young people discover that music is just the best thing in the world. That's what a cool position to be in. So that's what is exciting me going into 2025.
Wow. Watch this space, my friends. Okay, that's super exciting. I can't wait to hear more. But, I'll be following with bated breath and would love to chat with you about that again in the future, whenever the time is right. But Josh, believe it or not, we have reached the end of the podcast. I've got one more question to ask. And this is a question that we ask to all of our VIP guests. And this is to choose a track for our VIP title playlist. And talk to us a bit about why you chose it.
The track that I want to choose is called Lil Liza Jane by the Preservation Hall Jazz Band off the album Shake That Thing, which is my absolute favorite drum solo ever. It's the greatest. It's by a drummer named Shannon Powell, who I had the great fortune of studying with when I was in New Orleans a couple of years ago. I lived there for a little bit and it absolutely changed my life. This guy is one of the greatest players who has ever lived, period. He is just the best. So swinging, so captivating, such a unique sound. It's deep. It's so in the tradition. It's so in the box. It's so perfect. Like, it's just mind. It's perfect. And I love this drum solo. It's melodic. He's using all kinds of different sounds, the cross stick, the tambourine, the toms. It's just perfect. I think it's one of the greatest moments of drumming that's ever been recorded. And I'm not even exaggerating. I'm obsessed with this track. I listen to it, but anytime before I have a gig or anything, I will listen to the song like on the way there. It's just so much fun. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I had the amazing fortune this past year at Jazz Fest, which is the big music festival that happens in New Orleans, actually getting to play with the Preservation Hall Jazz Band that's on this record, with Shannon, one of my drum heroes. He was singing and I took over his drum seat for a couple of tunes, and it was just So much fun. I was like almost crying, almost in tears at the kit. But I did, I held it together and I got through the songs. So yeah, I could talk about New Orleans and the value of that music forever, but the song speaks for itself. It's just great.
Most excellent. My goodness, what a choice and what a story. I love that. And again, a beautiful kind of poetic symmetry about the fact that you joined them on stage. That's just magic. It is. This music is magic and you're bringing the magic out. My contribution to this episode's playlist is De La Soul, Potholes in My Lawn, just because they are so kind of fun and sampledelic and they're not averse to adding a Foley sample into the mix as well. And yeah, there's a fair few samples from New Orleans, I believe, in their repertoire. That has been absolutely great. Thank you so much for joining us. Artist and creator of Rhythms of Comedy and so much more, Josh Harmon.
Thanks a lot for having me. This was so much fun. Loved it.
Amazing. Listeners, don't forget to subscribe, comment, and share Audio Talks with your friends and family. If you're enjoying the Audio Talks series of podcasts, why not pop over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts and leave a nice review. It really does mean a lot, and it helps new listeners to get to know about the incredible guests we talk to in every single episode, like Josh. For more exclusive content, some behind-the-scenes goodies, and maybe even some competitions, connect with us over on the Instagram. You can find us at Audio Talks Podcast. We'll be back soon for some more astounding Audio Talks. See you next time.